This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. You know that one friend who always finds the best travel deals, picks the right cards, and somehow ends up in first class for the price of coach? Smart Travel is like that friend, but in podcast form. They cover all things travel finance, like which flight deals are actually worth booking and which are just clickbait, and how to plan group trips without blowing your budget or testing your friendships in the process. Travel smarter and spend less with the help of NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Are you still there? To delete this message, press 7. To save it in the archives, press 9. To hear more options, press 0.
What are you talking about?
Well, hello there, Erin.
Hello.
Happy May. It is officially the summer.
Did you just call May the summer?
Yes, I consider May summer.
This is how you know in Canada we're really desperate when spring comes around.
It's not spring. Spring is only half of March and April, in my opinion. And then May rolls around and I'm like, it's summer. It's officially summer.
I'll allow this.
So what are your upcoming travel plans then for, I guess, this summer?
Ooh, we have some exciting stuff on for the summer. Well, I was just in Vancouver, so that sort of kicked it off. We're going to Newfoundland in July, which I am so excited for.
I'm so excited for this. For
yeah. And then we're doing some stuff around Ontario, like North Bay, Thunder Bay. We'll just be going up north to like hike and camp and see family. Then we're going to Halifax. At the end of the summer, we're going to Europe, to Sicily and the Netherlands, and maybe somewhere else. We're not quite sure yet.
Oh my gosh, Kay, this is so homey. I love all of this domestic travel and then going to like your home countries. This is so nice.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. What a fulfilling year of travel for you. I'm so excited for you.
Yeah, I'm stoked.
Okay, so I was looking for some fun stories for us to cover today, and I came across this article on Vice. It's called, "This is the Perfect Vacation for You Based Off Your Zodiac Sign."
Oh.
Okay, so you're an Aquarius, I'm a Libra. I'm curious what you think it's going to say based off of your own knowledge of your own zodiac sign. Erin's not like a horoscope girly.
Now I'm just thinking about, I know so many Aquarius people, so I'm thinking about where they travel to. I actually think it would be quite different from how I travel.
Okay, interesting, because I read yours and I was like, LOL, this is Erin.
Oh, really? Okay.
Okay. You ready? So Aquarius is all about extraordinary solo travel experiences. You probably won't catch them at popular resorts or tourist attractions. Quote, Aquarians like to step outside their comfort zone and they want a holiday that is unconventional, inspiring, and off the beaten path, says this astrologist. They love independence, so a solo trip is best, where they can explore at their own pace while making friends along the way in destinations that are full of locals, not tourists. How do you feel about this?
I mean, I don't love the phrasing. I know. I don't identify with the way they phrased it and presented it, but like
I read off the beaten path and I was like, yeah. Erin's gonna cringe.
I mean, there's nuggets of truth in there if you apply it to me. And I wouldn't say I'm not a hardcore solo traveler like I was before I was in a long-term relationship, but I certainly was a solo traveler. And I do still solo travel, as does Luke. And Luke is also Aquarius. That is interesting. It's interesting because it applies to both of us because we met because we were both traveling the same way.
And maybe that's why you guys are also so good at traveling together, because you also on your travels like to do separate things here and there and then you come back together and do stuff.
Yeah.
So there you go. You're a classic Aquarius traveler. Okay, here's mine. Libras are the romantics of the zodiac, so they're seeking sensual couple retreats or cozy getaways to share with their partner.
Did you guys book a private onsen by chance?
You know we did. Quote, Libras appreciate romance, balance, and beauty, so they would love a holiday that is elegant and stylish while allowing them to relax and connect with their partner. From romantic candlelit dinners to wine tastings in the countryside, Libras want meaningful conversation and cultural immersion in beautiful surroundings. So it's basically calling me like a romantic basic bitch.
I actually think this is true, though.
I think so, too.
Because, like, I'm thinking specifically of, like, the way Mark proposed to you. It was just so, like, over-the-top romantic. And Luke and I would never, like, we got engaged through one conversation between us. Like, you guys are way more into, like, let's make things, like,
yeah,
more showy and romantic. Which is a good thing. We probably should do more of that.
Well, Mark is a Pisces, and I think the whole thing around Pisces is that they're sort of like charismatic peacemakers. And it's really funny because I think our travel style is a reflection of our horoscopes for sure. Because Mark and I like to, I definitely like really like traveling with Mark for sure. Personally, I prefer traveling with him than solo, but I also have never solo traveled, so I don't know this for sure. But we just have a solid travel style. We're chill and it always goes really well. And we like to do things together. So like it totally checks out. And it's really funny that like our Japan trip was a balance of just like these intimate moments of just being together and doing stuff and then more exciting things. So it's funny.
Yeah.
Okay. So I truly came here to talk to you about something called travel dysmorphia that I also found written about on Vice. And so there's research that came out actually in September 2025 about travel dysmorphia that I was surprised we hadn't ever heard about or covered on the show. So I wanted to talk about it a little bit. So my question for you is, when you look at like your lifetime experience of travel, how do you feel about it?
Sometimes like it was a fever dream. But I feel grateful for it. Like, I always tell Lucas, if I got hit by a bus tomorrow, I would die knowing that I did things that I wanted to do and experience the world, like, in the way that I wanted to experience it.
So I feel
very
that.
Grateful for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is exactly the answer I expected out of you. Okay, I think you have a very healthy perspective on your experiences and the travel you've been able to do and your privilege. So this research that came out in September found that nearly 7 in 10 Americans suffer from travel dysmorphia. What do you think this is? I'm curious what you think this might be.
I honestly have no idea.
Travel dysmorphia isn't an actual diagnosable disorder like body dysmorphia, if you're familiar with that. That is a real thing. This is sort of just a phrasing for this phenomenon. And basically, it refers to a preoccupation with travel, or in this case, a lack thereof. So people with travel dysmorphia basically feel as though that they haven't traveled nearly enough and can't stop comparing their life to the travels that they see online. The study conducted saw that only 10% of Americans feel that they've actually achieved their travel goals. What is your reaction to this?
It makes me sad, to be honest, to hear that, because first of all, I don't think travel is something that we should view as like a goal. And it makes me sad to think that people can feel that way about something that like is such a privilege, and when like you should ideally feel happiness and fulfillment like in your home life.
Mm-hmm. This is what came up in the article, is that like the more findings that they were doing around this basically showed that travel has become more of like a milestone for people and like a marker of fulfillment and success. And we've talked about this on a bit on the show already before, but there is like modern travel is more emotionally tied to your personal success these days.
It's like viewed as an accomplishment to have traveled.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The author of the article said that they kind of joke, this sounds like yet another consequence of social media, which you and I were talking a little bit about before we hopped on this call. But basically, yeah, people just feel ashamed that they don't have access to life's luxuries and haven't hit these travel milestones. And like 7 out of 10 Americans is like pretty significant, I feel like. So
I do think, so we'll talk about social media because I do think that definitely factors in. But I also want to flag, I think this has to do with the general growth and accessibility to tourism. It's become like firmly middle class. And I think that there's classism wrapped up in this, where it's like a signal of your financial situation, whether or not you're able to travel, especially internationally. And I do think that has to do, because like in like the 50s, you only traveled if you were a wealthy person. But these days, like it is like much more accessible financially, but still not like.
Yeah. This article said that some of the most common obstacles preventing people from traveling, because it's like, all right, well, what's really stopping you from traveling? 63% said it was the cost, just the cost of travel, because I think this clearly points to the fact that there is a missing middle here. Like high class, low class is getting more and more separated. Then 19% said work commitments, 19% said family responsibilities, and 18% said logistical fatigue. So the main reason is cost these days. Even if travel gets more accessible, it's the costs are just bananas at this point. And like, look at airline costs and fuel and all of that stuff. So this article was very interesting to me. And there's more stats around social media, but I looked it up on the internet too to see if like people are talking about this. And I found a subreddit. It was on r/solo travel. And somebody said, it's a whole thread called depression due to the inability to travel. And they said, does anyone else here feel depressed when you can't travel for extended periods of time due to any personal commitments or financial reasons? How do you deal with it? I thought researching about places on my list might make me feel better, but it's making it worse. And so somebody called this the stationary blues, which I thought was like kind of cute, but also sad. And then they said, what you pointed to, whenever I get the stationary blues, I try to keep in mind that travel is an insane luxury that only a select few in humanity can afford, and that being deprived or unable to indulge in a luxury ultimately leaves me feeling grateful for what I do have and what I'm able to do. And then somebody else says, this is the definition of a rich person problem or something.
Oh, 100%. Like, yeah. But I feel for this person because it is true. We are inundated with it online. This is why, like, people probably don't know, but Lucas, like, is not on social media. And part of it is that he's like, I get too sad when I look at social media, even though I know I shouldn't be sad.
This is the thing, and it's not necessarily travel related, but I definitely a few years ago like went through my Instagram and unfollowed like a whole bunch of like celebrities and influencers and stuff, because I just found that I was comparing my life to them way too much. And it was not that I was like absolutely changing my life to try and be these people, but you get into this brain mindset of just feeling inadequate in some capacity. And so I was like, I need to just get these people off my feed so that I just stop thinking about this.
Comparison is the thief of joy. It truly is. And I think that social media is such an engine for comparison. It's truly all it is. Like, I think about this a lot. Like,
tell me more about why it's evil.
I've had people comment to me that all you're doing is making people feel FOMO, like when you post about your travels. I've like ruminated on this a lot, and it really bothers me to think about that, because it is true to a degree.
So according to this survey, 47% of Gen Z said influencers and YouTube content influences their travel dysmorphia, and 55% reported that social media makes them feel like they're falling behind in life. That's so sad. And obviously, I think for Gen Z who grew up with social media, this is like extremely toxic. It's been informing their brain development. Like,
well, yeah. And I was thinking about this because like when I started backpacking, the first time I backpacked, I was 19 or 20. I didn't have access to any like social media where I was seeing people backpack. It was like this, most people around me were like, what are you doing? I feel like it's much more normalized now.
Yes.
Yeah.
It feels like when I've talked to you about your solo travels when you were in your early 20s, what informed those travel decisions was really like what your parents had told you about their experiences.
It was literally and just my parents.
I think about a friend of mine when we were in our early 20s, she was traveling solo all the time and it wasn't really informed by any, she was also an Aquarius, but it wasn't informed by anything that we were seeing on social media. These were just things that she wanted to do.
I will tell you, there was one Facebook group and some people will know it was called Girls Love Travel.
Yes.
This Facebook group, I'm pretty sure still exists, but it like, as they always do, it grew. It just like exploded and became like monetized somehow. But in the early days of Girls Love Travel, I was in there like at 19, 20. And that was like my only exposure to, I guess, like inspo, like online inspo for travel. Because when I started traveling, like I think Instagram existed, but I didn't join Instagram till like my mid 20s.
I think personally, this travel dysmorphia feeling or feeling like I haven't hit all my travel goals yet, I feel like I definitely identify that with in some capacity. The only thing is I don't exactly know what my travel goals are other than just like certain places that I'd like to visit. And I feel this like anxiety around urgency to do that only because of the state of the world, not to like hit milestones faster, but to be like, oh, if you wait longer, like California might be underwater then or something like that. You know what I mean?
Last chance tourism.
It's last chance tourism.
I don't think that what I feel is travel dysmorphia, but I would say that I do feel FOMO pretty often.
Let's say you've only visited half the places you visited. Do you think you might feel it then?
Oh, you mean because I have a higher volume of travel experiences that I feel it less? Potentially, yeah. And I think this is connected to privilege as well because I have had access to travel my whole life. Mm-hmm. So it has never been out of reach for me. I hate to say this because it sounds, I don't know. I take issue with people saying this, but I think it is true to some degree that like I intentionally built a life that made travel accessible to me. Like Lucas and I have made many decisions financially that have maintained our access to travel. So that factors in, but at the foundation of it, like it's privilege for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about your role as a social media content creator, and I was going to ask you about like how you reckon and balance this. I don't know if you feel a responsibility to this, but like this is, if people are feeling some type of way on social media, then like obviously, as you mentioned, you feel like as a social media content creator, you're like, oh my God, like I don't want to be contributing to this. But at the same time, I can't help but think there's a bit of a difference between like the kind of content that you're putting out, which is people follow you for travel content. Like they know that they're going to come and seek travel content on your page versus more of like a lifestyle influencer who's not only talking about the travels that they're doing, but also like the products that they use for skincare and like general lifestyle, you know? So I think there's a difference between sort of more niche content that people can select and choose versus like more aspirational, I guess. But yeah, I'm curious how you think about this.
I intentionally try not to post content that is meant to just make people feel FOMO or aspire to visiting a place. I try to make most of my content educational to some point, which I do think helps. And I also don't travel as much as your average travel influencer. And so I'm not constantly posting recent trips because I don't go on as many. But this brings me to a point that I think is really important to flag that everyone should remember, which is that if you're following a travel influencer, especially one who is doing it full time, it's so important to remember it is their job.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not paying for their travels most of the time. I would say 30 to 50% of the travel I do now is subsidized in some way. And that also factors in like to the privilege piece. Like I have found myself in this job and it has made travel more accessible to me. I would not be traveling as much as I'm able to, especially around Canada, if I didn't have this job. So I think like it's easy to forget that when you're watching influencers, especially because so many people don't properly tag their content like as sponsored. So it just looks like they're just like off traveling the world, like living this dream life, but they're working. It's important mm-hmm. to remember they're working. And as someone who's done it, I know it looks amazing, but like it's tiring work. Like it can be exhausting to do that full time. Like I often wonder if I would want to do it full time because traveling and creating content full time really is, it drains you to be doing that.
Just to wrap this up, this idea around like dysmorphia and Gen Z is really interesting because I did a little bit more digging. And this is like not the only phenomenon. There's another phenomenon called money dysmorphia that I think is like pretty much tied to this idea. And basically, lots of Gen Z and millennials feel this money dysmorphia, which feels like they just don't have enough money and they're never going to hit their money goals. But what they find is that a lot of these people are actually financially better off than they realize. And it's just because there is this like internalized feeling of unsafety around money, and that people are just like, there's a hypervigilance and people are very worried that they just aren't hitting their financial goals, or they just have warped views of their finances and aren't able to give themselves enough credit for the things that they already have or have already experienced. And I think this is so tied into the travel side of things too,
yeah,
where it's like, this is you. There's tons of like financial influencers online. There's tons of people showcasing rich lifestyles and very high goals around financial goals. And it's so tied into travel, too. And it's so interesting that
it's late stage capitalism doing its thing.
It's late stage capitalism and social media working together as best friends.
But it is very true because, you know, like one of my closest friends, he works in London and he works in like luxury fashion. And we've talked about this. He's told me the demographic of people buying luxury goods, specifically luxury clothing, has gone down.
Mm-hmm.
There are younger people, a lot of Gen Zers, buying these goods. And he was saying to me, they can't afford it. But because it's become so normalized to see people wearing luxury designer clothes online.
Gucci slides.
Yeah. Gen Zers will work a job for a whole year just to buy those Gucci slides.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas like, and we were talking about this when he and I were in high school, we were shopping like secondhand clothes. Like it never would have crossed my mind, but I also wasn't inundated with this content when I was in high school.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I don't know what else to say about this other than it's sad. I was like trying to find a happy note for this because I saw this article and was like, ha ha, travel dysmorphia. And then I was like, oh no, this is actually like pretty devastating. But I don't know. I hope this changes. And I think it's like very clear the impact of social media and all of this stuff.
Yeah. I think the takeaway for me here is like how important it is to put intention into how you engage with social media and put boundaries around it. This is something that I do a lot more of for myself lately, not spending time, like intentionally not spending time on social media. And it has like made a difference in my life for sure.
I've put a timer on my phone. So once it's 6:00 p.m. up until 8 a.m., I'm not allowed to access my email because that was giving me a lot of anxiety.
Well, we live in a world now where people have access to us all the time. Like that stresses me out too. Like
it stresses me out so much.
When people are constantly pinging me, like texting me, and I feel bad because even friends sometimes, I just like don't have the energy to respond because I'm so overwhelmed by like all the texts.
Same. Absolutely the exact same on my part.
Yeah.
You can expect a response from me in 3 to 5 business days.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
Well, like I'll always respond if it's important, but sometimes, and this is like the antithesis to who I am. Like I was talking with a friend about this. I've always been a quick responder because I have like the need to please people. So if someone needs me, I feel like I have to respond as soon as I can. And I've always been like that. It's only in the last year that I've become slower to respond because of like my paralysis over like all the messages.
I absolutely relate to this. I absolutely relate to this. Yeah. So, yeah, I would say if you're feeling travel dysmorphia, I'm sorry. It sucks. This is all a result of late stage capitalism and social media. And just remember, tech giants want to ruin your life. And so embrace the wonderful moments that you do have in doing the exciting things that make you happy. So hope that helps.
Hey guys, Aaron Miller here from Armchair Explorer, and I just wanted to let you know that our new series is out now. We've got kite skiing across Antarctica, Aboriginal storytellers, and the craziest whitewater race in the world. We're going on a bucket list hike across Italy. We're going to the fjords of Norway in search of the Northern Lights and lots, lots more. Our goal is to take you on the trip of a lifetime every single week. You can find Armchair Explorer on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening right now, and at voyescape.com.
Hi, I'm Pauline Frommer, host of the Frommer's Travel Podcast. We post new episodes weekly, detailing the kinds of money-saving tips and cultural insights that will make your trips richer without making you significantly poorer. We do so by interviewing real travel experts like TV host Samantha Brown, Frommer's authors from around the globe, and such public figures as Free Solo's Alex Honnold. It's a fun travel party. I hope you can join us.